available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, I mimicked that pretty well. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We might even do a little basketball. No, we're not. It's all Pac-12 football. Sorry, that's not us. We're going to stay true to who we are, what we do. As much as David loves the Pac-12 hoops, we are a Pac-12 football podcast. We'll continue to be so, no matter what the Pac-12 does in basketball. But anyway, we got to get to a lot of stuff. Today, I was in Vegas for the Pac-12 championship game, so I'll give you kind of a full report. We had boots on the ground there. There was the makeup game, the COVID makeup game. We'll talk about that, USC and Cal. Dozens of people were there to watch that one. We got the Pac-12 awards. We got some news with players. We got some coaching defections. We might have inter-conference coaching transfers. Who knows? There's lots of stuff. David, I'm excited. This is like a big one.
This is big. It's a coaching carousel that seems to know no end. And we're just going to be watching as some truly insane things happen.
Insane. Insane in the membrane is what the kids say today, I think.
That's what they say today. Not 25 years ago, but today. It's right here, right now.
Well, if you want to get a hold of us, we just did a show late last week, so we don't have as many questions this week, but you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12Podcast or go to our website, Pac-12Podcast.com, where all of our content would be up there. And if you're over on Reddit, you want to chat with some other Pac-12 groovy fans, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. That's where we can be found. And then if you have the Apple Podcasting app, you got your iPhone, you got your iPad, whatever you got, use that app. Follow us. Follow the Podcast of Champions, the Pac-12 Podcast. And you can rate us with the 5 stars and say whatever you want about us. And then we are contractually obliged to read those said reviews on the air.
We are.
Do we have any?
We have one new one from last week when we didn't read any, but I'm not going to go back and try to figure out how many we missed. So we're just going to read this one.
Okay, sounds good.
This is from Westwood Bruins. Lincoln Riley is Chip Kelly. 5-star podcast because of a 5-star host and some dude who is inside Troy. A huge LA school hired a brilliant offensive mind who's run one of the best offenses in college football history. UCLA hired Norm Chow. Record scratch? Wait, USC hired Lincoln Riley? Surely he'll fall in love with workshopping, running 3 tight ends, and pissing off local media. That happens to other schools, right? USC hired the skinny Chip Kelly. Let's hope for the same results as UCLA because we're all for equity, right? If Lincoln Riley wins more than one game, I'll willingly take my punishment of wearing jockey everything. The only way to battle this tyrant is for UCLA to hire B-team podcast host Michael Hanna as head coach.
All right. It's a little different situation. I get it. There's some parallels. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chip Kelly was good, but he was in the NFL for several years. Mm-hmm. Like, Lincoln Riley's coming off, like, college football playoff runs, Big 12 runs, and Heisman Trophy winners within the last couple of years. Like, players are still on the roster. So, little different. But it could still be a disaster. We don't know.
We never know. And, I mean, it is USC, so you've got to always take that into
account. There's a lot of history of disaster.
There's a lot of history of disaster. There's potential for the circus to come to town once again. And so we're all going to be paying attention and having fun with it.
We will. But thank you for the review and a little jockey mention there. Yeah, we might do some gift card again with the jockey stuff. That was a lot of fun. So thanks for everyone that sent all the reviews over the past few months. We gave away a whole bunch, hundreds and hundreds of dollars we gave away to the public. We helped the economy.
We did.
Like, literally put money in the economy, in the people's hands, to get them
We will call it the Podcast of Champions stimulus.
Yeah. I like it, our stimulus package.
Yeah.
Through jockey. We also want to put money in your hands with MyBookie. You could invest in stocks, David. You could double your money with MyBookie. That's a no-brainer. If you have a hunch, it can pay off if you use the promo code PAC12 at MyBookie. I guarantee you'll double your first deposit all the way up to $1,000. Double your money right off the bat. Best part is MyBookie accepts everything from credit cards to well-known cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and all those other ones. You can bet and withdraw with crypto if you want to. There's a big UFC fight this weekend, closing out 2021 with a bang. UFC 269, it's headlined by lightweight champ Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier. This fight amounts to a coin flip, but both men have finish rates over 75%. You know it's not going to go down to scorecard, so don't miss out. Double your first deposit up to $1,000 using promo code PAC12. Go to MyBookie today, place your bets, and watch the sparks fly with UFC 269. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. So thanks again to MyBookie being our sponsor, continuing on through bowl season. If you want to, you know, keep going. So the end of the regular season, David, and the championship game, more than doubled my MyBookie account. So I'm very happy about that. The USC game and the BYU one is the one that kind of screwed me. But otherwise, whenever I put a bigger bet, they all came through. So my record might not be good, but the winnings were good. So that's good.
I'm glad you found a way to recontextualize your awful season.
It was pretty awful. Yeah. Well, we're not done yet because there's we still got the bowl season left. But we only had two games. You got them both. I went 1-1. I mean,
yeah, there's 2 weeks ago I picked always there comes this explanation. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, but I only picked that way because I had to pick opposite you.
Exactly. But no, that's true. But yeah, you got 2-0. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Finished 500 on the season.
You got to 500. Oh, nice. Okay. Oh, that's good. Well, not finished because we still got bowl season.
Mm-hmm.
So we got some games, Pac-12 games. We probably got to talk about the bowls and stuff too. I'll have to pull that up with the bowl things. But first, we got to get to our game. Why don't we do? You want to do our game recaps?
Should we get to news?
You want to do the news first or the game recaps?
You got to do news, baby.
Okay, let's do...
Because, look, all right, we were all gassing up the Lincoln Riley hire last week. This is almost as big of a piece of news.
It's huge.
Mario Cristobal messing around with Miami for potentially as many as a couple of weeks, it sounds like, now that the reports are starting to leak out. However it happened, leaving... what had been the premier program in the league for the last 3 or 4 years, at least, to go to Miami from Oregon. That's a huge, huge move for the league. And here's the thing. Depending on what Oregon does with this hire, I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing.
It could be an improvement, right?
Could certainly be an improvement on the field. I mean, if you just watched either of those Utah games that we just got finished watching... with that amount of talent to perform that way in those environments against those teams, to lose to Stanford this year, to lose games every year that they have no business losing with the amount of talent they have. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of guys who will be an improvement in the coaching department. I don't know if there's a bunch of guys who will be an improvement in the recruiting department, but right now they need a coach who can actually coach up what is right now top 10 talent.
True. So like if you bring in a decent recruiter, you can keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring in like a Chip Kelly, you can win for a few years and then, you know, the talent will drop off significantly. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talent on this roster and depends on who sticks around and all that. Cause whenever you have a coaching change, there's going to be potential significant turnover. But yeah, I agree. This might not be a bad thing. Now, the problem is like he was rolling talent wise as far as like bringing in the recruits and all that and was doing almost unprecedented things the way he was getting Southern California talent. Obviously, that was going to be more challenging. Once where you have Lincoln Riley there, you have if USC or UCLA had a coach that wanted to recruit the local talent, that was going to make it harder on Oregon. No, they didn't do that, so they didn't make it as hard on Oregon as it could have been. Not that Oregon couldn't still be successful, but it was just going to be a more difficult road. But Mario Cristobal has proven that he can do that, and you know, I guess the hope's going to be you get someone else that can do the same thing or do something similar, but also know when to call a timeout or when to punt.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge thing. And I think the recipe for success at Oregon isn't necessarily being like a top five talent acquisition place. I think you've got to have the coach, like the actual coach on the field part nailed. And I don't think they did that. And I think you're right. even if Oregon drops down into top 15 talent, top 20 talent, they're not winning on talent alone. They need a coach. And the thing is, they're going to drop down to that level unless they do some really outlandish things nationally, simply because USC is going to recruit Southern California a lot better now. So end result, Oregon might drop off a little bit talent-wise, which means you need a better coach to even make up for that. Right now, they've had a coach who's been able to squander, to an extent, top 10 talent. I wouldn't say Mario Cristobal was a horrible coach, but he was, and this is the analogy I keep making, he was essentially Jim Mora, where you're going to mildly underachieve with your top 10 talent. You're not going to achieve at the level of that. You're going to mildly underachieve. Not hugely underachieve, like they're still making Rose Bowls and stuff, but with that level of talent, if you were an overachiever, you'd be making national championship games. And so the thing with Oregon going forward, I think they have to make a decision. So do we want to go back to the kind of Cristobal route where we just get a dynamite recruiter and try to maintain as a talent factory? Or do we want to see if we can turn what we have in the program right now into a national title contender in the next year or two? Because I think it's all there. The pieces are there for them to be really good next year. But I think getting a coach who's not going to reset the whole table, who's not going to be like, oh, I've got my own culture, I've got my own thing, I'm going to, start from square one, tear this whole thing down and start over. So my point is, Chip Kelly, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, we can joke about Chip Kelly, and potentially not a joke, obviously, but when Chip Kelly was winning and that coaching tree was winning, they were doing unique stuff schematically, right? Like we're running tempo when the ball is on the hash closest to our side because
they truly had Charlie Weiss's pronounced schematic advantage.
Right. That Weiss never had.
Uh-huh.
But they did. But then you were also, you could get the occasional five-star out of Southern California. You got guys from Texas. It wasn't just about we're going to recruit the best. Like, that's sort of what USC does and then backs off on the performance. Right. Like, Oregon should, I mean, you can recruit at a high level, but you want to schematically be, superior to other people a lot of times. I think that's where you're going to have the edge. That's how you're going to make national championship games like they did before. Not saying Helfrich was like the schematic genius or whatever, but that was, the Chip Kelly tree.
Well, and the thing with Helfrich was a huge part of it was the defense fell apart. And right now they've reloaded defensively with the talent that they need to bring in a coach who's going to nail the offense, but also somebody who's going to bring with them a good defensive coordinator. So if you did go the Chip Kelly route, he obviously can't bring Jerry as an arrow. Now I'm not I'm gonna break kayfabe for a second. I'm being a little facetious about Chip Kelly. I think his best days are definitely behind him, but I also think he's a superior on-field coach to Mario Cristobal. I think he could walk in there next year and win 11 games. I think that could happen. It's a much better situation talent-wise than even what he walked into at UCLA and certainly what he has now at UCLA. I think the powers that be at Oregon, it's a much more cohesive administration than what Chip Kelly walked into at UCLA. I think there is a structure and an infrastructure in place that would allow for very little of the freelancing that Chip Kelly did when he arrived at UCLA. I don't think he would be allowed to cut as many players. I don't think he would be allowed to do a lot of the tearing things down to the studs that he was allowed to do at UCLA. And so, I don't know if it's got any real legs. I mean, I know there's a little bit of smoke here, but I don't know if it has any real legs or if it's just part of the typical contract negotiations and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think it would be the worst thing for Oregon, and it would obviously be very good for UCLA to get out of that whole situation.
Oh, come on. 8-4.
I'm gonna leap across these two tables.
Beat the absolute crap out of a USC team that's coached by one of the top coaches in college football, and Chip Kelly puts 62 points on them.
Dante Williams.
Oh, no. Well, no, the Lincoln Riley's a coach now, but that's their team.
Uh-huh.
You can't get rid of that guy. You got to give him a big extension.
Mm-hmm.
10 years
mm-hmm.
guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so turnabout fair play stuff is great.
It's really great. Yeah, it's I want to leap across these two tables right now. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here because Chip Kelly's not going to get a big extension at UCLA. It's a question of whether he will accept a small extension that will potentially feel like an insult, I think. Yeah. I can't see UCLA taking the temperature of the room, taking the temperature of the fan base and saying, okay, we need to lock this guy up for 5 years and $7 million a year. So it's going to be a question of whether Oregon truly does want him. You know, whether it sounds like Phil Knight and maybe some power brokers up there might want a return to the Kelly days, whether they win and whether they're willing to offer him a bunch of money, and then whether he's willing to leave Southern California. Because I don't think UCLA is prepared to fire him, but they are, I think, maybe prepared to let him walk.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, Phil Knight was really upset. They put that big extension in front of Mario Cristobal. That's all weird, too. The Manny Diaz stuff where they just left him out to dry. This is, and I'm happy to see there's just people kind of condemning the early signing period, because I don't think it gets this silly if the early signing period doesn't exist. The problem is, though, if you're in the second, like, if you were Oregon and you were firing Mario Cristobal in, like, November, like, it gave you a heads up, you know, and you had some time. Now you're trying to replace them with a week left in the early signing period. Like, it makes things all that much more difficult. And it's harder to, it's like you're rewarded for being a jerk. You're being a dick early on and getting rid of your guy, because that gives you a little bit of time. You know,
they've got to get rid of this early signing period.
Have to.
They have to move it to summer, or yes, they have to get rid of it entirely. You can't keep doing this, because first, like, for our business, but I think also fan interest, it has really, really diminished interest in recruiting generally, I think. Like, the build up to National Signing Day in February always led to a ton of fan interest, because it truly felt like part of the off season. Now it feels like, oh wait, this other thing is going on in December, like while we're like thinking about our bowl game or while we're thinking about the end of the season or whatever it is. It doesn't have the same build-up and lead-up and interest and focus that it used to. And I think you can fix it pretty easily by just making it July. Make the early signing period in July for, like, essentially quarterbacks to sign so they can get their stuff done, so they're not continuing to get recruited, and so they can also help recruit the class. But for everyone else, I mean, most guys are still wanting to go through the process. It's just it's become, I guess, the thing to get signed in December. But yeah, they need to do away with this, because it's massively accelerating the timelines and making college football even crazier.
It does.
Legitimately, I think it diminishes fan interest. Like, I don't think people are as interested in recruiting now as they were.
No, I mean, because you're preparing for bowl games and yeah, there's coaching changes and all that. Like, you put it right in the middle of...
Well, somebody posted this on the board. Like, how would you make the offseason better and more interesting for college football the same way it is for, like, the NBA and all that kind of stuff? And I was like, well, the first thing would be to change the signing days. So one is in February still and one is in July.
Yeah.
So you have two offseason periods to kind of build up to and gear up to that you can get excited about. And then the other one is to, like, change spring ball so that all programs are providing, like, a real level of access and maybe do, like, you know, depth chart tracking and that stuff. And it would still just be for diehards, but at least it would provide some interest and engagement.
Yeah. Real quick on the Chip Kelly stuff. 2018, 6 games under 500. 3-9, you know, like, that's a rough one. He's going to get mad. Then 4-8, 4 games.
I'm taking my headphones off to get ready.
Then the pandemic year, only 1 game under 500. So really close to breaking even. 8-4. 4 games over 500. Like, that is significant improvement. And you see year after year after year getting better and better and better. Why aren't the UCLA fans not embracing Chip Kelly more, David? Why are they not?
I'm gonna blow my stack.
But honestly, they have gotten better. Like,
they've coached people better. There's a legitimate answer to it, which is, first, you have to take the whole look, which is it's 18-25. You have to also acknowledge that this was a culmination year. Like, this was... They're probably going to be, like, rebuilding to an extent next year. Now, the schedule's bad enough that they can probably go 8-4 again, but they're probably going to do it without their quarterback. They're probably going to do it without maybe their star running back. They're probably going to do it without, you know, 3 of their starting offensive linemen from this year. So there's reason to think they're going to take a step back next year. And is 8-4 good enough? Like, is that good enough for that to be your big year if you are, you know, watching a Chip Kelly team?
Yeah.
And I think for UCLA, it can't be. I mean, they've fired coaches for less. They fired Bob Toledo when he went 8-4. You know, they fired Carl Durrell with a much better 5-year record than Chip Kelly has through four. They fired Rick Neuheisel with a slightly better 4-year record than Chip Kelly has through four. It's not good enough. Yeah. The trend line might be slightly up, but I think it's going to dip back down again.
Significantly up.
If you start low enough, any trend line's going to look pretty good.
That's what's good for Lincoln Riley. He starts off at a 4-8 team. So.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing is you have to pay it off if you're going to do what Chip Kelly did when he arrived at UCLA, which was gut the roster. That's what he did. I mean, the oft quoted whatever 48 scholarship players or whatever he had his first year, that was because of things he did. It wasn't like, oh, God, UCLA wasn't recruiting before him. No, he gutted the roster. He cut like 30 dudes. So, yeah, he only had a few guys on scholarship because of things he did. Now, to pay that off, you actually had to have a good fourth year. And I think this was barely above average given how bad the Pac-12 was.
Gotcha. So we'll see. Like, Kalani Sitake's name has come up. I mean, we've heard the Dave Aranda's. Maybe.
And so this is the interesting one for me, because a guy like Sitake, I think, would be really good in the long term at Oregon. I don't know if he wins immediately, though, because I think he's one of those culture guys. Like, he's going to want to build his own culture, do his own thing, and be given time to build the thing. I think there's immediate expectations to win huge at Oregon. And you've got to have a guy who's, like, comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Is that Chip Kelly? I don't know. But I think that's the idea, is you've got to have somebody who's willing to take the keys and just turn them in the ignition, not try to rebuild the car.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the problem too is, like, we've heard Matt Campbell's name come up a lot. We've heard Dave Aranda's name come up a lot. It's sort of like their immune system gets a chance to build up. You know, there's like, they're like, oh, we've already like been at, like, there's more extensions put out there. Apparently Aranda's been looking at one. The fact that they've been shot at, you know, like attacked for weeks already, Oregon comes into the game late and, like, oh, those look like good candidates, and they've already, like, built up their defenses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think it would have to be a really, really good fit for those guys. And again, I don't know if Oregon would necessarily want to do what those guys want to do, which is probably build their own program. Now, Dave Aranda, he's won more or less immediately at Baylor. Like, he had a bad first year, the COVID year, who cares? But he's gone 11-2. He went 2-7, then 11-2. That's more or less winning immediately. Would he be really good there? I don't know. He's a defensive guy. They seem to have had a history of more kind of offensive-minded head coaches.
Yeah.
That seems to be what kind of works there. But sure. But I don't know if Matt Campbell's the guy. Matt Campbell might be more of the program-building type, which you've got a program. Like, you've got talent in the program. You don't need to rebuild. You don't need to change the culture. The culture there is good. I mean, they've won a lot of games. You need somebody who's just going to take them over the top.
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, Luke Fickell might have just played himself out of it. You know, he makes the playoff with a Group of Five team. They're going into the Big 12. It seems like he's going to stick around another year, but, you know, there were some big jobs open, and it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of interest from him in any of those other ones. I don't know if Oregon could do it, but,
look,
you know?
I know Joe Moorhead totally screwed up at Mississippi State, and I think he was just hired by Akron, but maybe you tell him, hey, you want to stick around and try to do this thing, and see if he works for a couple of years. And if he doesn't, then you hire somebody new again.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Bulls in a little bit, but playing in the Holiday Bowl against Oklahoma with Bob Stoops as the interim head coach. And I know there was talk about
Mike Bellotti,
bringing him back. I think they named the receivers coach, like the interim head coach, but that would have been awesome. And, you know, for Bellotti and stuff to do that, but a lot of stuff going on with the Oregon football program. Phil Knight's 83 or something like that. And I've read some stuff on, like, he wants to see a winner, you know, before he does. So I kind of expect a big splash. Like, we saw LSU make that big splash with, like, out of the blue. Could Oregon do something like that where they're like, oh my God, how did they get that guy? Like, where that's not someone even on your radar.
Who would be the out of the box, oh my God, how did they get that guy though?
I mean, like Fickell, like, you don't expect him to be going anywhere now, like, if you could get him, but, like, you probably couldn't get him until after the playoffs. Like,
so the one for me would be Chris Peterson.
Okay, well, he doesn't work right now. And he's
right. But that's the one where, like, I think he would be, if he was actually interested in, you know, being a college football head coach again, I think he would be the top name on the market right now.
If someone coming out of, like, retirement. But I mean, like, if they go, oh, we're going to hire Dabo Sweeney or something like that.
Oh, yeah, they're not doing that.
You don't think they'll do something, like, big, splashy?
Dabo has no interest in going to Oregon from Clemson.
Yeah, probably not. But, like, that's, I don't know who else you get. Like, who's a top program? Like, Did you expect Brian Kelly? There's been talk about him leaving and stuff. Maybe didn't think it would go to like at LSU. But yeah, there's just not like the kind of names out there.
Nick Saban, baby.
I mean, that like obviously that's the.
What about so Oregon is the one school in the Pac-12 that I could actually see doing this.
Are you gonna go? Okay, Lane Kiffin, like
Urban.
Urban, okay.
Go steal him from Jacksonville.
All right, so Urban would be freaking huge.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be enormous.
Yeah.
I mean, like a Lane Kiffin is a hot, hot name right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, but nothing like Urban. Like Urban, that's true.
That would be the sick one. That would be the truly awesome one.
And because it's like later in the process, if they're like, okay, we're not trying to get a coach before the early signing period, we have time. So if you're trying to get before the early signing period, the NFL stuff makes really Matt Rhule, you know, if things aren't going so well there at Carolina, like there's some, if they wait, they could get some, those would be big wow hires, you know.
Jacksonville's 2-10 right now.
I know. I'm surprised they won two games, but.
Yep.
Well, the Ducks, hold on, we should play there.
Oregon Ducks.
This was an Oregon Ducks podcast so far. But yes, big news. With the Ducks, we'll see if the carousel keeps turning here in the Pac-12. Let's go over the Pac-12 awards that just came out. So good timing from us, or lucky timing from us, that we get to record the podcast right after the awards come out real quickly for first and second team, all Pac-12 selections. Do you know who has the most? Would you guess who has the most?
Utah.
Utah does. You know who has the second most?
USC.
No.
Oregon?
No.
UCLA?
Chip Kelly, second most, first and second team all. Like, that's why you got to sign him up for a long extension. 10 for Utah, 9 for UCLA. Right up there. I mean, they're this close to winning the Pac-12. Like that shows you one player away from winning the Pac-12.
I can't keep threatening you because then somebody will report me.
Oregon had 7 first and second team selections. Arizona State had 6. Washington had 5. I mean, they're bad. Oregon State, USC, and Wazoo each had 4. Arizona had 3. Stanford with 2. And Cal and Colorado each only had 1. Cal probably did the most with the least.
Yeah.
I guess they were 5-7, but I mean, Washington, man, being that as bad as they were, like Stanford was butt, but you know, they only had 2 selections, so I guess they, you know, they probably performed about where you thought they would. So the big ones, the offensive player of the year. Let's see what you think about this.
Drake London, baby.
Drake London. So he still led the league
in yardage and receptions. I think it's fine. Now, the thing is, I think the other arguments all were nuanced ones. I think Tavion Thomas had an arg. I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson had an argument. There were a variety of guys. Jaden Delora had an argument.
Yeah.
But I think Drake London, with what he did in just his 8 games, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, it was sort of like no one really blew you away offensively. I mean, like you look. I mean, like Cam Rising, kind of the same situation. He only played. You know,
if Drake London's available, USC probably wins 2 more games.
Yeah. He's still. I mean, if you like, who was awesome in this conference this year offensively, you'd say him.
Yeah, him.
And it was, that's about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't have an issue with it either. The fact that he still led the league. And if we had some quarterback that was just, you know, crushing it or whatever, and you wanted a running back or something.
No, there was a lot of pretty good. I don't think there was great.
Yeah. He was great for, you know, just quickly. It burned out a little, you know, 7.5 games. The defensive player of the year, Devin Lloyd for the Utes.
Fine.
Pick 6 in the game I saw.
Yeah, totally fine.
Would you be fine? I'd have put my Heisman ballot in. Would you be okay? Like, who on the West Coast would you have put? If you had, I have to put a West Coast guy on the ballot, who would you have put on? It could be either two guys we named. I mean, it's hard. It's hard.
Did
right?
you go Drake London?
No.
Did you go Tavion Thomas?
I went defense.
You went Devin Lloyd?
I'm not allowed to say.
Oh, geez.
I
love it. That's fine. No, that's fine.
So all the Ute fans out there, your boy could potentially have a third place Heisman vote. because I do like to include the West Coast. It's been harder the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's not been as easy. But he's been an absolute stud. I think he was second in the nation in tackles for loss. And
so I think the easier one to have gotten onto the stage would have been Thomas, because he had over 1,000 yards and he also had 20 touchdowns.
That is big.
The touchdown number is always like, oh, even though they're kind of situational, it's still like, oh, okay. Like, you can maybe talk enough people into that you might get him, like, you know, into like fifth place or sixth place.
Yeah, I didn't think anyone was going to be in any place.
No.
You know, Bryce Young was just ridiculous.
Dude, so I barely watch any football besides the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Watching that Alabama-Georgia game, Bryce Young, a freak.
Yeah.
Like, it is freaky watching him play football. And yeah, I think it's totally normal that he left Southern California to go to Alabama, despite growing up a UCLA fan, like literally with UCLA parents and UCLA. Here's how late UCLA was on Bryce Young. They offered him in January 2019. He had already committed to USC the previous summer after having been offered the summer before that. Alabama was earlier on Bryce Young than UCLA was.
Crazy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Well, you know, he's got his process, though. You got to trust the process.
Uh-huh.
The freshman offensive player of the year was Washington State's Jaden Delora. So congrats to him. I think he led the league in touchdown passes.
Yeah, he was really good, especially down the stretch.
I didn't check the last week or so, but he did. He was at one point. Freshman defensive player of the year. You can also go to the Utes, Junior Tafuna. So congrats. And the coach of the year, also Utah, Kyle Whittingham.
Mm-hmm.
I know Yogi Roth was really petitioning for him to be the national coach of the year. He's got the potential to do that.
I think our boy Jimmy Harbaugh is going to be getting that one.
He might get that. Yeah. But a 1-2 start and going to the Rose Bowl. Pretty cool. USC member started 1-3 and went to the Rose Bowl.
Yep.
Not easy to do. So, you know.
And I would say Utah is like the legitimate, the team in the league that right now, like if you could just pick the teams that are hottest in college football, like I think they would have a playoff argument right now.
I 100%. Like, that's one of those teams that if there was a playoff, you wouldn't want to. You're like,
no.
Like, oh, crap, I don't want to play them.
Yeah, like a Utah-Michigan game would be a lot of, I won't say fun to watch. It would be a brutal knife fight, but it would be, I would enjoy it.
Yeah. But congrats, the Utes taking the most awards, the most major awards, coach of the year, lots of stuff going on there. One of the things there was, I think it was Wilner had a call with Merton Hanks about the officiating, and he said, we have work to do, but this is not the same unit it was a few years ago. This is his second season as the senior associate commissioner of football. He said, we are not the same. We challenged the officials. We put a few on notice that they had to improve or they would need to move on. They answered the call. And I was in the press conference with George Klyavkov, the commissioner. And he said, you know, that they have that, there's a protocol for, like, if there's an egregious call, they'll put out some kind of statement. And he said they didn't need to put any statements this year because nothing met the criteria. I know some of the fans weren't so happy. One of the reporters was giving like real specific stuff. So it's funny. George Klyavkov came in and was sort of like, oh, and I'm not sure that there's an officiating problem. Now it seems like he's more of like, I'm going to be defending the officiating problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was fine. I would say like on balance, the officiating was slightly better this year.
I would say so.
I would say there were a couple of crews that I noticed. There was one with like the bald guy. What's his name? The white bald guy. Do you know
him? Yeah, I know who you're talking about. And Mothershed. Mothershed's bad.
No, I was saying the bald guy is actually good.
Oh, okay.
Like his crew doesn't call a lot of penalties is basically my criteria for being good.
Right.
There were only a couple that were still pretty bad. Mothershed's awful. 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 They need to get rid of him. But like there were noticeable differences between some of the crews this year, whereas in the past I would say they were all like pretty much interchangeably horrible.
Yeah, if you know the guy's name,
it's not good.
No, that's not good.
Yeah.
Like, if you know who's that left guard for Oregon State, like if you know his name, it's like, oh, because he gets all those holding calls.
Yeah.
You know? It's not because, well, he's an All-American. Like, it might be. Like, it might, okay, he's like one of the greatest of all time. Like, this is the greatest guard I've ever seen. Maybe. Mostly it's because, oh, he had 3 holding calls in that game.
Right.
It was below average. Yeah. So, all right. So that was a little stuff there. Do you want to go over, or maybe we can go over the the games, and we'll go to the bowl games and stuff.
Sounds great.
Okay, so let's we'll probably start with the most important game we had.
USC Trojans.
On the road, take it on.
California Golden Bears.
I mean, as we said in the preview for this game, this did determine division supremacy in the Pac-12.
The North wins.
The North wins. This was the battle of the fourth place teams. And Cal won, beating USC 24-14 in a extremely sleepy and bad game.
Yeah, it was, 4-point spread. Cal's favored by four. USC started off as a slight favorite. I was in Vegas. I'm not going to confirm or deny that I put money down on the California Golden Bears, but it was good. I was happy. About midnight on Saturday, I had a good run down to the sports book. But this was closer than I thought. USC actually played harder. I think they had 47 scholarship players make the trip. Guys like Chris Steele, Drake Jackson, like big name defensive players didn't even go. Hunter Eccles. So they had a lot of people that weren't there. They were starting like, they had one corner, I think, available. So they started like Kalen Bullock, who's been a stud, like a freshman safety. He was starting a corner. They did a bunch of stuff like that. And they still played pretty hard. And like they ran the ball pretty well. And it's like, I was worried that they were not going to cover, but they turned the ball. They were still made like the USC mistakes, but they played a lot harder than I thought. And Cal was playing well, had the COVID thing, came back, started playing well, and then just get boat raced by UCLA. So I wasn't sure how Cal was going to bounce back. They bounced back and played okay. Chase Garber was all right, but
Chase Garber threw three total incomplete passes in this game.
Yeah, but it just wasn't like the big plays. They weren't making the big ones. Yeah. You know? They could have scored more points than that, but there was just it was a little sloppy. Their student section, I thought Cal student section showed up, but there was not a lot of other people there.
It felt like a terrible bowl game. Like that's what it felt like. It felt like the Foster Farms Bowl. Like it felt like something nobody wants to be there, and they're just kind of going through the motions. Like there were some guys playing hard, but also there were like walk-ons playing. Like it's just
true,
you know, trash. Jackson Dart took a huge hit.
That was, he got his bell rung.
Yeah, I think it's still ringing. How's he doing?
So he said he could go back in, and when we talked to Dante Williams afterwards, he was like, you know, he just wasn't cleared medically. So they bring in Miller Moss, another true freshman. He threw a pick. He almost, his first pass, it was in the red zone already, dumps it off to a guy. I forget who it was. He gets down to like the three. They don't score the drive, but he gets it down there. And it could have been his first career college pass would have been a touchdown. And that was like Matt Leinart did that, like back in, I tweeted about that. But he did end up throwing a touchdown later to Katie Nixon, who hadn't done anything for USC all season. He catches the last touchdown of the weird COVID season. But Jackson Dart definitely got his bell rung on that one. It was a bad decision. Like he was trying to run and put his head down. He's just not been as mobile since he had that knee surgery earlier in the year, the Washington State game. But
Cal,
it unfortunately, it would have been cool if one of these teams could have made a bowl, but it was, 4-7 versus 4-7. But, 5-7, we thought Justin Wilcox might go somewhere. Doesn't seem like it, right? I mean,
there's people talking about him for Oregon, too.
I guess so. Yeah, his name has come up.
The same people who are talking about him for Washington, which also didn't seem like it was happening. So,
but after what? Cal starts 1-5? Like, pretty good 5-7 finish.
Yeah, legitimately, if COVID hadn't crushed them, they would have been 6-6.
Yeah, they would have made a bowl game without the weird Arizona game, their only win of the season. USC just was like limping towards the finish, just needed to get this season over with.
Yep.
We both had that one right. We both had Cal. And then in Las Vegas, we had
Oregon Ducks.
And it was technically a home game for
Utah Utes.
Yeah, so this one was, I would say it was a carbon copy of the game 2 weeks ago, but honestly, I thought Utah was even more dominant in this one. The final score was not like exactly the same. It was 38-10 instead of 38-7, but I thought they were better in this one than they were 2 weeks ago. And Oregon, it was you were at the stadium, so you weren't hearing it, but like the way
we could hear it. It was
the way the announcers were talking about Oregon the whole time. Like they didn't show up. They did not show up. This team looks like they've like just packed it in for the season. They were really going hard on Oregon and their coaching staff and the preparation to come into this game and look like this.
It's almost like the head coach might have been looking to somewhere
else.
Yeah,
no, that's the thing. Is like when you look like when you look at this now in the light of reports that Miami was talking to him up to 2 weeks ago, maybe this makes a little bit more sense. But Utah was dominant in this game. Offensively, like they ran the ball all over them. Tavion Thomas was really good. Cam Rising had some nice plays on the ground. Micah Bernard was good late. But defensively, they really shut down Oregon. They made it really hard on Anthony Brown. He once again threw two bad picks, and they couldn't run the ball at all. It was one of the, you know, one of the best performances from what has turned out to be a really good Utah team, and a really good Utah season. But they were excellent. And it was once again, just a laugher at halftime. It was 23-0, I think, at halftime. And it could have been worse.
I think it's 24. But it was like 14-0, which seemed about right, like late in the second quarter.
Yeah.
Utah scores a touchdown. I forget the circumstances behind it. And then Oregon has the ball with like less than a minute left. Do you remember what happened in 2 weeks ago or whatever?
And Anthony Brown.
The punt return. Yeah.
Anthony Brown, running to the sideline, decides to throw it back across his body as if he's throwing it away, but instead he throws it directly to a Utah defender.
He was jumping out of bounds. Like he was out of bounds, but his toe didn't touch the ground yet, and then gets rid of the ball. If you're like picking a ball up a third base and trying, it's like you're trying to throw it across the diamond to first base, but there's the opponents aren't over there waiting to catch the ball. Like that was the weirdest thing. And then Utah scores again right before halftime when it should have been probably 14-0 at half, two games in a row. It ends up being 28, you know, 2 weeks ago, and then 24. I think it was 24-0 in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just mistakes, tons of mistakes for Oregon. Not many for Utah. I mean, Cam Rising did throw two interceptions in this game. It's not like he was perfect. One of them was like a ridiculous thing where the ball like got tipped up in the air and the Oregon defender played center field and
it
made
was
the diving
weird.
Catch.
Yeah. Flying up there like, what is going on?
But on balance, he made much better decisions than Anthony Brown did. But this was, I mean, it was, again, a complete no-show from Oregon. I think we determined truly who was the best team in the Pac-12 this year, and it was not the team with all the 4 stars and 5 stars. It was the team, that developed from the beginning of the year to the end. And again, if you're Utah, maybe you think about, well, what would have been if we had started Cam Rising from the beginning of the year and hadn't tried the Charlie Brewer era. But, you know, you can't change that. Right now, Utah's going to its first Rose Bowl, and that's pretty cool.
I think Oregon missed a couple field goals. That after that bad interception, Utah kicks I think it was 50 yards or something. It was like a really long field goal. Everything Utah did just seemed to be like, oh, they prepared for that. They were ready for this. And Oregon just seemed like they were hoping good things happened. Like it was just weird. In general. So this is the first time to Allegiant Stadium. Obviously the first time the Pac-12 has had this in Vegas. It's not easy to get in there. I think I had media parking. I didn't even bother. I was at the MGM and I took an Uber over. You get pretty close. Cause I was there early. But getting out of there, I just walked. I walked across, across the bridge, the strip, and then go to MGM. There's not like a ton of parking, I think, around there. But, you know, so just if you're going to go in the future, just prepare. Because it's not, I wouldn't say the easiest thing. We had pick up our credentials and walk all the way around the stadium. You can't walk around. It was like you had to go way wide around stuff. And we probably just went the wrong way. But a big group of media trying to figure out where we were going. But I got in there in time. Press box is nice. You're really high up there. I took a picture or two coming in, and I think there was a big group of Oregon fans I just happened to get outside the stadium, and I think people assumed there was a lot more Oregon people there, but once you got in, it was obvious. It was pretty red. And the cross for me, it was red. And then you look down below and even below where we were, it was red. A lot of Utah people. It did feel like a home game. I don't know if that came across on TV.
No, it definitely did that it was a Utah home crowd, basically.
Like cheering, screaming when Oregon has the ball, forcing false starts, things like that. Kliavkov had a meeting with the press, and I thought he was good. he's, you know, sort of asked about like the new coaches and, you know, the Lincoln Riley stuff. He kept it general at first. Like we've all got, you know, the three new coaches. I think they're all going to make an impact. And now we have 12 great coaches, you know? So sort of like, okay, so the three that you didn't have before, like you had 9 great coaches before and now you have 12. Like that seemed a little, like, maybe not, you know, like, okay, UCLA, obviously, great coach. But, like, is Carl Durrell a great coach? I don't know. Like, I'm not.
You
know.
No, I think you would have been better served to just say, we've upgraded at 2 different areas. We've upgraded at Washington. Kalen DeBoer is a much better head coach than Jimmy Lake was. And Lincoln Riley's a much better coach than Clay Helton was.
But then he got into some of the specifics of what, like, a Lincoln Riley can do. And, like, you mentioned Bryce Young. Like, if the Pac-12, if it's USC or Oregon or UCLA, whoever, if they keep Bryce Young, like that probably helps other people, like CJ Stroud, like, you know, maybe he stayed. Like, I think he said the same thing I've been saying is like, if USC recruits at a high level, it's helping. It's good for USC, but it's also helping the whole conference.
Yeah. Here's the thing, like quarterback talent, a lot of it does come out of Southern California. It's still true. Like, you're going to still see guys playing quarterback who are from Southern California at other areas. Like, that's always gonna be true. Bryce Young doesn't leave Southern California if Lincoln Riley is at USC or if UCLA recruits him.
Yeah,
like he doesn't. He left USC because, like, who would have,
right
who was sticking with USC at that point?
Pretty good decision on his part.
Now, I don't know CJ Stroud's circumstances. Maybe it was different.
He was late. I think he was later, like recruited later and stuff.
Yeah, but even that one, if you've got Lincoln Riley at USC, or if UCLA is an actual Southern California recruiting power, which it hasn't been now in some time, maybe that one goes differently. Like, there's some obvious stuff. There's all these Arizona guys who are leaving the region who, previous, you know, cycles, Arizona guys would just go to LA. Like, when you want to get away from home, okay, we'll just go to LA and, yeah, you know, dominate the Pac-12 from there. Those guys leaving the region.
Like, I'll go to Texas A&M.
Things are affected by, you know, USC or UCLA even being a real recruiting power in the region, not just trying to do whatever weird thing Chip Kelly's trying to do. I don't know if that affects the other teams in the league that much, but it still would be nice to watch Bryce Young playing games in the West rather than playing games for Alabama.
I mean, pretty much every Pac-12 school could use an upgrade in quarterback. Right?
Like, yeah. Like
every
single
one of them.
Well, and if Bryce Young's at USC, does Jackson Dart go there or does he go to Utah or wherever the hell he wants him to go?
Yeah.
So it does have knock-on effects, especially if USC is having to drop down to, you know, the typical like 4-ish star West Coast quarterbacks that otherwise would go to ASU or Utah or UCLA or Oregon, yeah, or whatever it is.
I was impressed, though, that, like, so when that was happening, that was Riley's first week, like, they got, like, 3 5-star commitments in 3 days or whatever. Like, Klafkov mentioned it, like, on his own. Like, we've already seen an upturn in recruiting. Like, could you imagine Larry Scott, like, knowing anything about something like that? Like, if a memo came across his desk, like, oh, one of the Pac-12 schools just got, like, 3 5-star guys. Like, he could... There's no way he would even acknowledge that.
Definitely not. But I think Klyavkov has it right. He's invested in the success of his top-tier programs. I think he's going to also be very invested in what Oregon does right here. Because Oregon has been, you know, if you go since even 2000, they've been number 2 to USC, I think, since the turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be hugely invested in what they do going forward. And I think he was hugely invested in Lincoln Riley getting hired at USC.
He talked about just like, it's everyone. It's like, it shows that you need to invest, and it, you know, it's not up to him. He's saying it's up to the individual school. So he's going to expect a program like Oregon to really invest into it. So I like the way he was kind of engaged. Let's see. Oh, the press box food. Meh. I thought they would like have some, like, you go to Stanford games, like they have like awesome press box food. Nowhere near. Like, it was a hamburger bar. They had a good like apple cobbler, you know, sodas. It was only for like the 2 hours before the game. Once the game started, they cleared the food out. And then there was like popcorn later. Wasn't like cookies. Like, I was like, oh, I thought, like, this is Vegas. I thought we'd have like some kind of spread. So
interesting.
Yeah. It wasn't like amazing.
You gotta send your boy George a memo about
I'm
that.
I'm gonna ask him about it. We still got to get him on the show. He said they said he would come on, so
we'll get a postseason George.
We'll have postseason George. Yeah, like so, you know, kind of recapping everything that was going on. And one other last thing. Oh, the atmosphere in general, like you talked about the Cal USC game, like it felt like a bad bowl game. This felt like if you've ever been to Levi's, like I don't care who was playing in it, it was awful. Like this, the atmosphere was terrible. This was. Now, maybe it was just because Utah traveled so well. Or, you know, Oregon fans were into it when you know they were doing well. It wasn't very much, but the atmosphere just felt like this is – it felt like the Pac-12 was big time for a minute. Like, it just – it was good. Like, this was the right choice. Go to Vegas. Like, don't do Santa Clara.
No.
Vegas was so much better. And we'll see if it continues that way. But it was great. Like, I love the atmosphere there.
Yeah, it looked awesome on TV. You could hear it on TV. So I think, just keep it there forever.
Nice. Okay. And then I think that's it for our – was there anything else? Oh, no, bowl games. We got to talk about those. Okay. Okay, so let's go through the bowl schedule. We have first on – you want me to – do you have the bowl schedule up?
I've got it pulled.
Okay, so – the first bowl team for the Pac-12 will be
Oregon State Beavers.
Taking on Utah State. They're Aggies. So is that like just like an agricultural worker?
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
We don't have any Aggies. There's no truck stops, right? According to our friends at the No Truck Stops podcast.
Utah,
you have to have truck stops for Aggies. Have to be a truck stop, I would think.
Utah State taking on Oregon State in L.A. at the Jimmy Kimmel L.A. Bowl. This one's Saturday, December 18th. First one on the schedule by a long shot at 4:30 on ABC. Oregon State has opened as a 7-point favorite. We'll do our picks going forward, but awesome for Jonathan Smith to make a bowl game. That program is trending upward. I think everyone, when they know, you know, Oregon State's on the schedule now, they're expecting the best coach team in the conference.
This is a tough one, and we'll do our previews. But like, if you remember, Utah State,
you were talking some mad shit about Utah State in the preseason.
They were awful last year,
uh-huh.
And everyone apparently they brought in like 40 transfers and got a lot better,
and they beat that Washington State ass to start the season.
They beat it was 26-23 or something like that. But they go 10-3. They put up a bunch of points on a really good San Diego State defense here in like right down the street in Carson, California for the Mountain West championship game. So Utah State completely turned things around. This is not an easy draw.
No, I think this will be a good game.
Yeah, this is not an easy draw for the Beavs. But congrats to Oregon State, Jonathan Smith, getting – I haven't heard his name too much either, but maybe another year or so. If he does another bowl season, like his name might come up more. Okay, next bowl team.
UCLA Bruins.
Yep, they're going to take on the NC State Wolfpack. This is Tuesday, December 28th at 5 p.m. on Big Fox in San Diego for the Holiday Bowl. NC State is a 1-point favorite right now. So the Wolfpack, they were very close to having a truly elite season. They lost by a point at Miami, and they lost by 3 points at Wake Forest. They lost by 14 at Mississippi State, but they were very, very close to 11-1. Again, it was the ACC, so who cares? Because the ACC is trash. But these seem like probably relatively evenly matched teams, so this makes sense. It's UCLA making a bowl game for the first time in, I think it's literally since 2017.
Huge improvement.
Yeah, thank you.
8-4.
First time in the Chip Kelly era.
Coming off the COVID year, like, it could have been better.
I'm going to fight you. I really am. It'll be, no matter what, whether they win or lose, it'll be the best record since 2015, the Josh Rosen first year.
Extension, baby.
UCLA's literally had losing seasons every season since then.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is insane. USC hasn't won a bowl game since they won that Rose Bowl against Penn State 2016 season.
That was a great game, though.
That was a great game. It's pretty funny. As USC is as bad as you've ever seen, and they still win Rose Bowls every once in a while. Like, that's, like, that's, Like, what?
And they were, like, really good that year, too. Like, by the end of the year, they were really, really good.
Like, Utah beat them early. I think Stanford and, like, Alabama absolutely so destroyed
stupid.
Them.
So stupid.
NC State, though, I mean, they're ranked 18th, 9-3. But, you know, they're beatable.
Yep.
But that'll be I don't know. I don't know who's going to be favoring that one. We'll see. Oh, do you have the line?
In UCLA North?
Yeah.
It was NC State by one.
Okay, so that's slight favor. Okay. Next up, let's see. This is going to be a really, really, really interesting one.
Oregon Ducks.
Oregon taking on the Oklahoma Sooners. So again, just like some people settling a territory, like just like, that's me shoveling. Like, I don't know. What does a Sooner do? They arrive early and steal stuff? Anyway, Wednesday.
Those covered wagons.
Yes. Wednesday, December 29th, it's the Alamo Bowl at 6:15 on ESPN, number 14, Oregon versus number 16, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a 4.5-point favorite. It's going to be a weird game. You know, both teams without their coaches. Bob Stoops will be coaching for Oklahoma. Some wide receivers coach will be coaching for Oregon. No idea what to make of this one. Which team will be motivated? Will either of them be motivated? I think Oklahoma probably has a better chance of being it because I could see Bob Stoops really getting into them and getting them excited for the game. But it's going to be a weird one.
Kayvon Thibodeau is out.
Yeah.
He decided to say, peace out. I'm not going to play the bowl game. We don't know their status of the Oklahoma staff. Like, they're still some Lincoln Riley poaching going on.
There's will also be an Oklahoma home game.
Ooh, big time. I mean, they showed up big for when they've hired Brent Venables, like at the airport at 3 a.m. or whatever. Like, they showed up for that. There was more people of that than the USC Cal game, I think.
Yeah. But who knows? If you get Chip Kelly hired in time, maybe he's able to coach this game for you.
But yes, the fact that Bob Stoops will, I mean, he loves that program and he came back. He was working. He did work the Big Ten championship game, though. So I was like, oh, I thought he'd be out recruiting or something. He still did his media duties, but he'll be into this one. So I think the Oklahoma team's going to be motivated. It's just going to depend on, will Oregon be motivated? And sometimes the day after, like the game after you lose your coach, there's some motivation. So we'll see.
Yep.
This will be an interesting one, too. We got
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah, so ASU will be taking on Wisconsin. That's a badger. It's a little old school internet reference
like
for everyone.
It.
I think I did that the last time Arizona State played Wisconsin. This is Thursday, December 30th, at 7:30 on ESPN. It's the Vegas Bowl. Wisconsin traveling to Las Vegas to take on ASU. This will be a Wisconsin home game because they will want to be in Vegas during the winter months.
Yes.
So
it gets cold there.
Yes. Wisconsin's a 7-point favorite. Not sure that's enough. I think Wisconsin's probably a far better team. Now, do you remember the way this one ended the last time these two teams played?
No.
It was some real weird clock stuff at the end of the game where Wisconsin, like the quarterback was trying to clock the ball, but instead he just put it on the ground. And then ASU kind of jumped on it and sat on it for a little bit. And there were like 15 seconds left in the game, and the refs didn't stop it at all. They didn't stop the clock.
It just ended.
And it just ended with like the quarterback for Wisconsin like losing his mind on the field. So this will be cool. Wisconsin, I think, is actually like pretty decent. They finished the year going 7-1 in their last 8 games.
Yeah, they start off bad.
Yeah, ASU did not finish the season that way.
No, they did get to play Arizona, though.
They did get to play Arizona, but this was not a exciting march to the finish for ASU. So I think Wisconsin will win. I just don't know by how much. We'll get into those a little bit going forward.
Sun Devil fans, I highly recommend making the trip.
Go check out Allegiant Stadium, baby.
I do. I want to cover the Oregon State game since it's local, and I've not been to SoFi yet.
Just why not
use our media stuff to like go to stadiums you haven't been to?
There you go. And New Year's in Vegas, can't beat it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I could do New Year's in Vegas. All right, we got two more. Next up, we've got
Washington State Cougars
taking on Mario Cristobal's new home, Miami Hurricanes.
I assume Manny Diaz is not going to.
That was my noise for a hurricane.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good.
Okay. I don't think Manny Diaz is coaching this one. I would imagine Are they going to do an interim, or do they just have Cristobal?
No, they'd never have the new guy come
it's
in.
It's stupid.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, you can't do it. This is at 9 a.m. on CBS.
9:30.
I got it at 9 a.m.
Oh, do you? Okay. Yeah.
El Paso, the Sun Bowl is always a little bit early in El Paso. Washington State, Miami, both teams 7-5. Miami is a 2.5-point favorite. I didn't watch a single minute of Miami football this year, but you're telling me you're giving Jaden Delora points? Give me Washington
Take
State.
It.
I'm locking that in right now.
All right. I like it. Lock it up. Yeah. I mean,
Sun Bowl is always a good time. We've talked it up before, but I will say very hospitable. People in El Paso, they're lovely.
So another game where both teams don't have their head coach from the start of the season. Like two Pac-12 bowl games where neither team has their head coach. That's the silly season in full effect.
Totally.
Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
That's pretty good.
That's a, I mean, as far as bowl names go, like
I'll take it.
I mean, there's some classics like the Poulon Weed Eater Bowl. Like it's hard to beat those. But the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, pretty awesome. And then the last one, we have
Utah Utes
taking on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Again, what is a Buckeye? It's a type of nut, isn't it?
It's a nut. And it's like a casing that has like little spikes on it.
Yeah.
They're not like hard spikes, so they don't really protect. Maybe it's just for looks. I'm not sure.
A lot of stupid names for teams in the opposition column for bowl season.
There's a lot of good ones.
This is the Rose Bowl, baby. Saturday, January 1st at 2 p.m. on ESPN.
5 p.m.
I've got it at 2 p.m. Okay. What are you looking at?
The Pac-12's email that they sent out.
Did this thing get set to East Coast time or something? Because I got 2 p.m., baby.
I don't know. All right. That's fine.
It's the Rose Bowl. It's never on at 5 p.m.
Okay. That's what that's what the Pac-12 sent out. So,
well, like, the Pac-12's wrong.
My buddy Jim Thornby, I got to talk to him at the, he's been working at the Pac-12 for a while, but he's like a different role now. But
you're calling him out by name because he's wrong.
No, I don't think, he was very nice.
Okay. Well, it's on at 2 p.m. on ESPN. Number 11, Utah, number 6, Ohio State. Couple of 10
teams. Oh, yeah,
because
it's after the
it's the Rose parade. Bowl. It's never on at 5 p.m.
I've been to a few of these. Remember I went?
Yeah. Do you remember going to the Rose Bowl?
I don't remember going to Rice Eccles for the first time. Like, and then
no, wasn't there a Washington Rose Bowl that you also did not remember?
No, we were talking about teams like, you know, I'd love to see Washington play Ohio State. I'm like, I literally just went to that game 6 months ago. In person.
This will be fun. Utah is a 6.5-point dog against Ohio State. Ohio State was until the beating at the hands of Michigan, a popular pick to win it all this year. Utah, I think, is one of the hottest teams in the country right now. I think this is going to be a ton of fun. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. Looking forward to that one.
Maybe a chance it's Kyle Whittingham's swan song.
If I could maybe swing going to three Pac-12 bowl games. Like, I'm flying, like, for Christmas, I'm flying back to my family back east. But I could do the Oregon State one.
You do L.A. Bowl.
I could do the Vegas one, potentially. I think I come back the day before. And the Rose Bowl, for sure.
Yeah, you can do Vegas, and you can do Rose. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you could, you know, after Vegas, like, just immediately that morning, get on a flight to El Paso.
No.
No?
That's, do you ever fly to El Paso?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're landing over, you know, tumbleweeds, and then all of a sudden it's like there's an airport. You're like, what?
Yeah.
One of my college girlfriends was from El Paso, so I went there for the first time, and I'm like, you land in L.A. for, you know, an hour of your approach, all you see is city, and then, like, there it was like nothing.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Okay, let's see. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and do some of your questions. All right, we're back here on the podcast of Champions. We don't have a ton of questions, so we'll get through these pretty quickly. We did get something from Clean. I just want to put this out there on the podcast. It was a suggestion because we were talking about last week doing picks. There's something called officepoolstop.com where you can do things like that, where it's like kind of the logistical stuff. So I'm throwing that out there. So then all our listeners that can remember, Hitler Day, you remember everything we say. So when it comes around next year and we're like, hey, we should do some picks. No one's ever brought that up before. Then you could say, no, remember Clean said office,
but then
cool
we're,
stuff.
But just an FYI, then we're also going to require one of you to set it up and do it.
right. But at least you'll bring it up. So I'm just throwing that out there. Since Hitliday referenced something we said 5 years ago, which I didn't even know we were around that long. We got a voicemail, so why don't we play that?
What's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. Last week I called about Lincoln Riley, but I want to call about a couple other coaches this week. It's basically about the Oregon coaches. You know, I'm just kind of curious about how to evaluate them, you know, because, like, I definitely think that Mario Cristobal to Miami is definitely a really good fit, for sure. I'm just trying to figure out how good he is at face value because, you know, this year, you know, he's probably going to finish ranked or whatever, but, you know, a lot of people – don't think their team's good at all. I know David's one of them. Ryan's probably one of them, and that's fair. You know, last year he had the most Mickey Mouse Pac-12 championship of all time. And, you know, he hasn't really competed for a title necessarily in any other years. Maybe you count 2019, but they would have been rolled by Clemson, Ohio State, or LSU that year. So I'm just kind of curious. And then with Jonathan Smith, I remember I called saying that I think he's just kind of another one of these mediocre guys. But this year he did definitely, you know, take a step forward, but it's still 7-5. And, you know, both my teams, you know, ASU with Herm and USC with Sark, you know, were fighting these 7-5 guys and both ended up not going so well for them. So just kind of want to know, you know, how to evaluate the Oregon coaches and what you guys think of them and how good they are, you know, just kind of like at face value, like I said, not necessarily with the fits, but who they are as coaches. So thank you, guys.
Great question. With Cristobal, I think he's a dominant recruiter. I think he's a mediocre coach. I think they've certainly not overperformed their talent, and I think they would have underperformed slightly. Jonathan Smith, I think it's like trend lines because you got to like kind of throw out the COVID year as just a lost and weird year. The trend line is basically 2-10, 5-7, then 7-5. And just eye test when you watch them play, they're one of the better coach teams in the league, especially offensively. Now we'll see if they're able to take the next step because right now they're 7-5. So will they be able to get to what essentially Mike Riley was able to cap out at, which is like a really good 9-3 or maybe 10 wins. I think Oregon State has some limitations, just, you know, obvious limitations from talent acquisition standpoints, but, the cap there has always been like you can get to 9-10 in a very, very odd case, 11 wins. But mostly it's, you know, can you be an above average program that's mostly making bowl games? And I think he's got him trending that way. I think he's got him trending towards a, you know, a solid 7 or 8 win average program.
No, I agree. I think, I mean, it's hard to compare him to like, oh, what ASU or USC is doing. I mean, that's, it's taken a while to turn things around, but he's got, you know, he's going in the right direction. You know, you joke about, well, Chip Kelly got better and stuff. I mean, you expect UCLA to be better. Like, you expected them to be better quicker. Could you have seen it? You know, last year was a COVID year, so it's really hard to say. But, yeah, I think they're going in the right direction. I agree with the Mario Cristobal stuff as far as, like, he hasn't been proven. He's an elite recruiter, not necessarily an elite coach, and we'll see what kind of fit he is. Down in Miami. And of course, we'll see who Oregon ends up getting to replace him. We got our buddy Scott emailed in. Oregon pasted, Ryan wasted. Warning, listeners, if you are at all considering betting real money on these two buffoons, look no further than Ryan's pick for Oregon to cover in the Pac-12 championship. Oregon, a team Utah pounded into the dirt a mere 2 weeks ago. He makes Dave, a man who cares less about this show than the shit he took this morning, look like a competent analyst by comparison. You're better off flipping a coin than listening to these two pretend to not have a pathetic understanding of football. Much love from Shooter McGavin. And he's got pictures of roasted ducks hanging there.
There wasn't a question there, but I loved the email.
It was, yeah. Just for...
Again, so, here comes the explanation
no,
for a
Shooter,
while.
Like, David picked the game correctly. And if you remember 2 weeks ago, I picked Utah to cover against Oregon.
What's dumber, picking it sight unseen or picking it after you literally just watched it 13 days ago?
I showed some much more foresight picking Utah the first time. And I was playing a numbers game the second time.
Uh-huh, yeah, there's the explanation.
Trying to catch, yeah.
All right, here's Kyle and Toluca Lake. Mario Cristobal is Clay Helton. Hot take incoming. Mario Cristobal is just Clay Helton with slightly better recruiting. Both of these coaches failed to develop talent, are horrific in-game, and never seem to have solid game plans for specific opponents. P.S. Look at Cristobal's Pac-12 winning percentage compared to Helton's.
A lot of comparing to Helton stuff.
I could look at it. I'm not going to because that would involve like a couple of Google searches.
Yeah.
This is unfair to Cristobal.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. I think the Jim Mora stuff is more fair.
Helton fell apart recruiting at USC.
Yes.
He had the worst recruiting class I think USC has ever had.
Yes.
And he was trending towards a pretty bad class this year, too.
Yes.
That's not fair. Cristobal has recruited at an elite level every single season at Oregon. And even as a coach on the field, I would say it wasn't exciting. It was kind of a chore to watch Oregon play offense, especially. But they were better on the field, too. I mean, They were better schemed on the field.
I agree. Peter from Vancouver says, Pac-12 bowl record, gentlemen. This is nicer than what the other email, calling us buffoons.
Uh-huh.
We are now gentlemen.
Yeah.
I like this better.
Yeah.
Given all the coaching changes of the Pac-12, does it really matter this year how well Pac-12 teams do in their bowl games other than the Rose Bowl?
Peter, I have a great answer for this. It never matters what the Pac-12 does in bowl
games.
I
knew you were going to say this.
Including the Rose Bowl. The bowl games don't matter unless they're in the college football playoff. I mean, that's the unfortunate reality. They matter. I mean, like, if you're trying to assess a particular coach, so, yeah, I guess to your point, there's... So a lot of these are not going to have coach evaluations attached to them.
Yeah, because there's...
Right. Yeah. But if you're trying to evaluate, like, okay, like this season in Utah football history, right? Will this be the best season of the Kyle Whittingham era? Because, yeah, he had the 13-0 season, but this team might actually qualitatively be better. I mean, we're going to determine that with, like, SRS and postgame. You know, if they beat Ohio State, they're probably going to leapfrog that team as the best Utah team in the Kyle Whittingham era, even with that team going undefeated because it's better class of competition. So I think there's, you know, some of that. But I also don't know how much else there is beyond that. I think, you know, whether ASU beats Wisconsin, Herm Edwards has still been a disappointment.
I think it helps. I mean, just the perception of the conference, maybe a little momentum.
See,
going into next year.
I don't know about the perception of the conference stuff. I think that's more done in the non-conference play before the start of the season.
Yeah, like the Oregon or Ohio State game was huge.
We already know the conference was ass this year. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to change it. Like, if Washington State beats Miami, that's not going to change things drastically.
You're like, well, maybe it's less ass, you know? Like, maybe they're not
slightly
quite
less assy?
Yeah, that could be less assy. You mentioned the SRS thing. I have a question. I think I emailed you a question you never answered, so I'll ask you right now. And anyone out there, I know we have some listeners that are big into this stuff. I was looking at USC's SRS official rankings. Like, so they're, I think it was their 1957 team or something. There was a team that was awful that was like 1-9. And then this year was also a negative SRS. Like, that was a negative SRS. This one was. They had a 1945 team, I believe it was, that went to the Rose Bowl and lost. They were like 7-4. And for some reason, they're worse than this team, and that didn't make sense to me.
So 1945, when they went
7-4.
Yeah, I'm looking. Hang on.
They went to the Rose Bowl.
I'll tell you, it was more than likely the competition they played. Like, they probably played some local high schools or something.
Because it was World War II. So
because it was World War II.
Okay.
So yeah, they lost to the San Diego Navy. they beat the hell out of Pacific, which is a non-major. They only beat St. Mary's Pre-Flight, which is a non-major, by 12. And they got shut out by St. Mary's, the real one, 26-0. Like, it's hard to take too much from those seasons. Same way it's hard to take too much from the COVID season.
Okay.
And so the reason to use SRS is because it's great historically. Well, I won't say great historically. It just goes back. Because it's really easy. It's a simple rating system. It's basically, essentially, how much better were you than average? How many points better were you than average? So it's a good, quick test case of, like, okay, my impression of this team is that it's not very good. Let me go look at SRS and see where it stacks up historically. And more or less, it's going to pass your eye test. Like, this UCLA team was clearly better than any team UCLA's had since 2015. And guess what? That holds true with SRS.
Okay.
USC was clearly one of the worst USC teams of all time. It doesn't really matter if it's since 1961 or 1945 or whatever. It clearly was. Yeah. And it's obvious in SRS.
It just compared, like, in 91, USC was 3-8, but they beat, like, Penn State.
Yeah, it's just...
Who was, like, a ranked team. So they SRS says this team's worse than that team.
Yeah.
Even though they had one more win or whatever.
Right, because it's all about, like, who you played and how you beat them. Like, you know, what level of dominance you showed. It's a really simple version of, like, the advanced stats rankings, like the Bill Connolly stuff or whatever. It's a really simple version of that, but it does give you the best... And it's really easy to look at because you can see it just on the... You know, the USC football seasons page on College Football Reference, it gives it to you all right there. You can't really do that for SP Plus because, first, it only goes back to, I think, 2005. And second, there's no real easy way to look at it in a chart like this.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Explanation.
All right. This one is a text message. Is Oregon just trolling UCLA fans with the whole "we'll take Chip off your hands" narrative? I'm sure you'll get to this in the episode before you read my text, but do either of you think this would be a good hire? I think it could be. I don't think it would be a good long-term hire, but I think it could be a hire that actually gets them, you know, into a playoff next year.
Potentially, yeah.
I think he could install an offense that would actually make use of that talent better than what Mario Cristobal was doing. It's just a matter of whether Oregon would force the right defensive hire on him and whether he would accept that. But there's talent in that program, and I think, you know, Chip Kelly... Even with all my complaints about him, he's still a really good offensive mind.
Yeah, yeah. Schematically, they do great things.
And I think it fits what Oregon has there right now, too. Like, it's not too dissimilar from what they were doing anyway. So, anyway, I think it could work in the short term. I don't think it's a great long-term move. But I think if you want to try to win a title in the next 3 or 4 years, I think you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
And then how many 2.0 situations at the same school actually work out? JR2, nope. Bill Snyder, second time around, that's probably the template. Or just maybe they're hoping for some of that nearly matchless Bob Nielsen magic that led Minnesota Duluth to 2 Division II natties in 2008 and 2010 during his second tenure. Dream big, Duckers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is you kind of want to see some new blood, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Oregon, like, I wouldn't hire Chip Kelly. But if you're going to do it anyway, I don't think it's like a hopeless move for Oregon. It's probably the best way to put it. If I was Oregon, I would like swing big, see if you can go pull Urban Meyer or whatever. I mean, obviously you got to hold your nose to do that, or whoever it is, some big names. But then, like, there's some stupid stuff that I think could actually work. I mean, I'm not going to recommend it, but like, if you wanted to go pull Scott Frost from Nebraska, look, he had to rebuild at Nebraska, but he would inherit a lot more talent at Oregon. He knows the culture a little bit better. Like, maybe he'd work there. I don't know.
Huh.
He is only 4 or 5 years removed from being really good at UCF, so who knows? You might have to get creative if you miss on the big names because the market's already been kind of disrupted.
It has.
Yes.
All right, I think that's it. Yeah, so I think that was our last question, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Very cool.
That's it for us.
Well, hope you guys enjoyed the show. We'll try to... Maybe, you know, there's some big, you know, if there's big transfer portal news, there's definitely been players hitting the portal and stuff. We'll work on all that kind of stuff for next time. And we'll preview next week. We'll preview the bowl games and stuff and make our picks, the final picks of the season. So should be good. But that's going to wrap it up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Thank you for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.